Welcome to another episode of the Paseo Pathway Podcast. I'm joined this week by Carlo. Carlo, thanks for coming on. I told Ashley last time we were together that, you know, you're a regular. How many times have you been on the podcast now?
Three times?
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
See, next time we won't even ask. It'll just be like Carlo's back with us.
Yeah.
But we are going to be talking about Job because that's one of the main books that we're reading in our reading plan that we've been going through this year in 2026. We've started the book of Job. It's a very unique book in the Bible, so we're going to talk about what makes it unique. We're also going to answer a listener question about the day of the Lord from the minor prophet Zephaniah. So stick around for that. We'll be talking about what is the day of the Lord? Has it already happened? Is it going to happen? But we always like to start with a tip to help people get more out of their reading. You know, we're spending lots of time this year, just from a standpoint of time, we're taking the time to open the Bible and to draw near to God. And so, of course, we want that to be as meaningful and as helpful and profitable as possible. So we try to give a tip each week that will help you get more out of the Bible as you're reading it. And this week's tip is a little different from ones we've done in the past. But the way I've decided to phrase this is to let the Bible say what it says.
Yeah.
And don't try to make it say something different than what it says. And we talked a little bit before recording on this, but why is that important, would you say, Carlo?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's always kind of through the lens of the people that I'm helping to lead, whether it's students or young adults. And I've just found that sometimes there's hard things that we read through in scripture, and a lot of it is how does it relate to us, and how does it make me feel? I feel uncomfortable with this. And
yeah,
sometimes our preconceived notions of who we think God is and what he should be for us, like we actually get into scripture and it challenges us.
Yeah, and I think 100%, as you're reading the Bible, there are so many things that stand out from the page that don't seem right. Like you said, we have these preconceived ideas about who God is and what's fair and how life should look. And then you read the scriptures and oftentimes we're confronted by what we actually see mm-hmm. in the text. And there's a tension there between the way I think it should be or the ideas that I had coming into reading that and mm-hmm. then what I'm seeing on the page. And so the tip for today is to slow down and sit with that tension.
Yeah.
Because what we tend to want to do is we either want to just ignore it because we don't know what to make of how it's describing God or what God is commanding his people to do, for instance. There are things that trouble us. And so we can, in one case, we could just ignore it and just kind of like, well, I don't know what that means, and move on.
For sure.
Which is kind of running away from the tension.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I think what often happens is we try to solve the tension. So mm-hmm. we try to explain it away like, well, yes, this sounds bad, but really, and we come up with oftentimes very shallow ways of trying to get God out of trouble, basically.
For sure, for sure. The apologetic or the systematic, right? Like, so we can wrap it up and then it's the same thing of, so we can move on.
Yeah.
Rather than, again, sitting in it and just yeah. allowing it to, man, maybe that needs to shape us.
You know, and what I would say is that it is better to read a passage of scripture and to sit back. Like sometimes I just put a question mark mm-hmm. in the margin of my mm-hmm. Bible, like, I don't know what to do with this. It's better to do that and just kind of keep it open because my intent is to read the Bible for the rest of my life. So mm-hmm. maybe the next time I read through that, God will have given me the wisdom to understand it. But it's better to walk away with a question mark and a mystery than to come up with a shallow, inaccurate
yeah.
explanation of why that's not a problem. So let the Bible say what it says. Don't try to make it say something that it doesn't. If we don't understand it, that's okay. Pray and ask God to keep giving you wisdom. And then keep reading the Bible year after yeah. year. And we will grow in our understanding.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of difficult passages and not understanding what God is doing, Job is a book that's all about that. So we're going to read chapter 1 of Job, and then we're going to dive into lessons that we can learn from the book, but especially from this chapter as we read through Job. So if you wouldn't mind, Carlo, maybe read for us Job chapter 1, verses 1 through 22.
Sounds good. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and the man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send an invite. They would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the day of the feast had run their course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for no reason? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the works of his hand, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your hand. Only against him do not stretch out your hand." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The Chaldeans formed 3 groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and behold, a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the 4 corners of the house, and it fell upon the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong.
Man, there's a lot that happened in 22 verses. Yeah, 22 verses. We covered a lot of ground. Before we dive into this particular chapter, some things that make Job unique. Many scholars think that Job may be the oldest book in the Bible, mm-hmm. perhaps even older than Genesis. Even though Genesis starts in the beginning, the book of Job itself might have been written before Moses. Mm-hmm. We're not 100% sure on that, but many scholars feel like that could be the case. And then what's interesting about that is even if it's not the oldest book, it's one of the oldest books, and it wrestles with a problem that humans have struggled with, obviously, from the very beginning, which is, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Mm-hmm. And I'm struck by that. You know, we start this chapter and we find out that Job is the greatest man in the East. He's greatest among the people of the East. So he had no peer among his own people on mm-hmm. earth. And then we've seen change to mm-hmm. heaven, and we're seeing this conversation between Yahweh and Satan, mm-hmm. and Job had no equal in God's sight either. He says, mm-hmm. "Have you considered my servant Job? There's no one like him." So this guy, if we could say that there was a human who was excellent, it's Job.
It's Job, yeah.
And yet by the end of this chapter, you know, he's been destroyed. He's faced tragedy that most of us can't even imagine, and it seems pretty arbitrary. So let's start with the fact that we're watching this drama play out on earth, but it's actually a story that starts in heaven. Mm-hmm. It starts in heaven, where it says that the sons of God presented themselves before Yahweh, and lo and behold, who's there?
Satan.
Presenting himself? Satan. I think that itself is just kind of fascinating, to see the interactions between Yahweh and Satan. But what stands out to you just at first glance as we look at this chapter?
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking about that tension, there's the hardship of, you know, why would God allow this to happen? But I think something in my reading earlier that stood out to me even more was, it seems like God is the one who initiates that conversation, mm-hmm. right? Satan's just talking about how he's going to and fro.
Yeah.
Right? And God's like, well, have you considered?
Right.
Have you considered Job? Yeah. And that's an interesting tension to think of. Like, why did God initiate this conversation?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, so one is like, well, what is Satan doing there? I think that's fascinating. We have to confess that there is much about the spiritual heavenly realms that we don't know. We get, mm-hmm. and I think Job is almost like the curtain is pulled back just a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. you can kind of glimpse back there, like, oh,
yeah.
And there are some surprising things happening. You know, the sons of God, most scholars view these as angels. So mm-hmm. these are spiritual beings that are reporting in. Mm-hmm. So they're reporting in to Yahweh, and among these servants that are called to report in is Satan, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
The my Bible has a note here that the name Satan literally means adversary.
Adversary, yeah.
And so the adversary is also one of those who has to come in and to report. And Yahweh asks him, you know, where have you been? And like you said, he's like, hey, I've been strolling around on the earth, causing trouble, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're right. God is the one who directs, you know, Satan's attention to mm-hmm. his servant Job. And we can speculate why that might be. In fact, like, do you have any thoughts on, like, why would God do that? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you I did. Like I said, here's the tension, right?
Yeah.
And so, that, you know, for me, it really begs a question. Well, why would this be, right?
Yeah.
And granted, we're still in chapter one, and there's many more chapters to sit and read right. through. But you begin to see this, like, this progression in Job mm-hmm. as he's navigating
yeah.
this God he thinks he knows.
Right? Yeah.
That he thinks he understands, his friends coming in. And so, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's part of, hey, God wanted to show us something, you know, even in that.
So. Yeah, you see this in the book of Colossians. It talks about how what God is doing on earth is often a testimony that he's displaying in the heavenly realms. And so mm-hmm. even with Jesus' death on the cross was actually God's way of proving to the heavenly authorities his power mm-hmm. over sin, mm-hmm. that sin itself was not something that he is unable to overcome.
Yeah.
And here, I mean, God is bragging on Job. Mm-hmm. He thinks very highly of him. Have you considered my servant Job? There's no one like him. And then Satan comes back and says, yeah, he's faithful. He's only faithful to you because you're blessing him. Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't he be faithful to you? And God says, okay, you can take it all away. Which
don't
is,
touch him.
And if you look at Job's response, it's pretty fascinating. I looked at verse 20 here. I underlined some things. It says, then Job, after he gets these crazy reports, mm-hmm. one after another.
Back to back.
Yeah. Then Job stood up. He tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground. Now, all of that is to be expected. Mm-hmm. But then it says he worshiped.
He worshiped, yeah.
And that's what jumped out at me, that all these other responses or reactions you totally get, like mm-hmm. to tear your robe, to shave your head. These were signs of grief and mourning, falling to the ground, but worshiping. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb. Naked I will leave this life. Yahweh gives and Yahweh takes away. Blessed be the name of Yahweh.
Can I just say something interesting yeah. too is how it feels like Satan is so sure mm-hmm. of what would happen if, you know,
yeah.
God removes that favor or allows Satan to, mm-hmm. right? He says, oh, he surely will curse you. Mm. And so I kind of love this, like, not a gotcha, but yeah. hey, look. What you thought
right.
is not true.
And we didn't cover it, but if we move into chapter 2, we see another scene in heaven, you know, mm-hmm. part 2 up in heaven. Once again, the sons of God are presenting themselves. Once again, Satan is there, you know, appearing before God. And again, God brings up Job. Like, hey, you. In fact, it's kind of fascinating. God says that he still retains his integrity, even though you incited me against him to destroy him for no good reason. And so, yeah, God is now pointing out to Satan, hey, you were sure mm-hmm. that he would curse me if I removed the hedge of protection and allowed you to take away all of his blessings. And yet he still holds to his integrity. And then mm-hmm. of course, Satan just ups the ante.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you take away his health, then he'll curse God. And what's fascinating is you read the book of Job. Job stays true. Where he really starts to struggle is when his friends show up.
Oh, for sure.
And start comforting him. So I think comforting. There's even a lesson there that sometimes the hardest thing to stand up under is the influence of other people, mm-hmm. you know, how other people, you know, speak to us or maybe incite us against mm-hmm. Against the Lord. So. Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do we learn about suffering from this passage with Job? And what do we think about his response here? What lessons can we draw?
Yeah. I think one of the things that's interesting is it's not just that this moment happened, but that prior to this moment, right, he is growing in his, I guess, knowing God, understanding, or his faithfulness to God, right? So it's mm-hmm. not like something happens and this now defines, right? But it's kind of almost, it feels almost like this preparation for, right? He's blameless, he's upright, he cares for his kids, right? Like he's got a lot of people, yeah. you know, under his kind of rule. And so you see the kind of person he has become prior to this moment.
Yeah.
That this moment isn't going to define that because of the way he's already seeing God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think of like the, what led up, you know, what, or the lead up to this moment.
Yes.
The circumstance isn't going to define what happened because he's already kind of made this, he's already made this decision that this is God. Like, yeah. I'm going to be faithful to him and be true to him. So it's part of why he can respond the way he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot, that, you know, who we are prior to a crisis is really what shapes how we handle the mm-hmm. crisis when it comes. And mm-hmm. you do see Job worshiping God and going out of his way to honor him and to pray mm-hmm. and intercede for his family. Later, as you're reading the book, you see that he was known in the community as someone who took care of mm-hmm. orphans and those mm-hmm. who were destitute. So I like that a lot. And I also am just impressed by Job's ability to yield to God mm-hmm. and say, blessed be the name of the Lord. The Lord gives, the Lord is taken away. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those tensions, right? Because God even says himself in chapter 2, you incited me, talking to Satan, without reason to destroy him.
Yeah.
And so God himself takes ownership of, this has happened because I sent it. I sent this destruction.
Mm-hmm. Allowed it. Yeah.
And that's what Job says, is that the Lord gives, the Lord takes away.
Yeah.
Blessed be the name of the Lord. One thing that's kind of cool about Job, and especially these early chapters where we're getting these behind the scenes views into heaven, Job didn't get that. So all Job knows is that things were going great and then everything
starts to fall apart.
Disaster strikes one after another after another. And so I think one thing I take from this is that as we go through difficulties, setbacks, suffering, hopefully nowhere near to the extreme that Job does here, it can be comforting to me to realize that there are things going on that I can't understand. Mm-hmm. So suffering is happening. That's what I see. That's what I'm experiencing. But I don't have the whole story, mm-hmm. just as Job did not have the full story here. It doesn't mean that it was arbitrary, that there was no, that God wasn't aware that this was happening. And that's one of Job's struggles as you read the book, is why is God silent? Why did God allow this to happen? He's asking that God would show up so he could talk with him and make his case. But God wasn't blind to what had happened. In fact, he was the reason it happened.
He was intimately involved in that whole.
Yeah, and then it also just gives us perspective that, of course, the biggest thing to us would be our prosperity. That's very important to me, is that, and I appreciate the blessings that God has given me, and especially when it gets to our families. And yet, in the divine scheme of things, my material blessing and even my family's well-being is not the ultimate concern in the universe.
Yeah.
There are things that God is up to that supersede what I want him to do in my life. So again, like, that's an uncomfortable place for me because I'm grateful for God's blessing and I don't want to go through something like Job did. And yet at the same time, this is something that happened.
Yeah.
And it didn't change God's righteousness or God's expectation that Job would submit and worship him.
Yeah. That's probably one of the biggest things we've been talking about in our young adult group. Is just that, you know, as they're trying to figure out life and how it's going to look and how it's going to play out, we talk often about, like, this, your success is not God's ultimate way of affirming his love for you.
Yeah.
Right? That we were looking at Thessalonians that, hey, here's the will of God, right? Your sanctification.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you look at circumstances, if you put yourself in the center of that, right? Well, then, yeah, you're going to blame God for all these things. But when you recognize, hey, God is actually trying to teach me something through each moment and through seasons. We talk a lot about seasons. Mm. But then we can begin to go, okay, like, God, I'm going to allow you to be God. You know, continue to shape me, mold me, grow me.
So, yeah. Yeah, and sometimes God is working through us in ways that are very difficult for us to appreciate, to make a bigger point. So here, everything that he's allowing Job to go through is tied back to, he's making a point to Satan that there are people on earth who worship God in spite of things not going their way or great tragedy striking them. And that's a worthwhile thing to be a part of, to even if it's very costly for us. I think of Jesus, you know, the cross was not a benefit to him, but it was a part that he played to help others and to honor the Father.
Yeah.
And the same way, sometimes we're going to go through suffering. It isn't because we've done something wrong or God doesn't love us.
Yeah.
It's because there's a higher purpose that he is accomplishing through our suffering. And again, hopefully none of us have to suffer to the level that Jesus did on the cross or that we see Job here in Job chapter 1. But the principle is that God will let us go through suffering that we don't like. Not because he doesn't love us, not because we've done something wrong, but because he's doing something that we may not even be able to have insight on.
Yeah.
Something that's happening in heaven, perhaps, that,
yeah,
like in this case.
And what a blessing it is, right, for us to be able to learn from it, right? It's not, it doesn't just remain a hidden thing, right?
I think that's why we get this insight. It's part of what we get from Job is that, okay, even when bad things are happening, it doesn't necessarily mean God doesn't love me or that there's no meaning. It may be that I just don't know the meaning.
Yeah.
Like, Job didn't know about this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. We are going to turn our attention to the minor prophet Zephaniah. And it's one of those books that's hard to find. Hopefully, if you're doing the reading plan, you were able to find him towards the end of the Old Testament. It's only three chapters. But Zephaniah was a prophet who represented and spoke on behalf of Yahweh to the southern kingdom of Judah towards the end of that time of the kings. It actually says in verse 1 and 2 that he was a prophet during the reign of Josiah, who was one of the last kings of Judah before the Babylonians attacked and defeated and carried the people into exile. But the question has to do with the day of the Lord, and that's a common theme in the book of Zephaniah. So let me just read this question. It says, the book of Zephaniah talks a lot about the day of the Lord. Has this day already happened, or is it something that will happen in the future? And so what I would say to that, and I'll get your thoughts on this as well, but the day of the Lord is, it's both a specific event. So there was a day of the Lord specifically that Zephaniah was predicting, but the day of the Lord is also a theme that comes up throughout the scriptures. And we still look to the ultimate day of the Lord when Jesus returns and sets things right. But the Day of the Lord is, as a theme, it is the promise that God will decisively intervene in the affairs of the world to accomplish his purposes. So sometimes it can feel like the world is just going off the rails. And where is God?
Yeah.
And the Day of the Lord is the promise that he will intervene. And when he does it, it will move the world back towards his purposes. Now, sometimes that intervention, oftentimes, the Day of the Lord is not a good thing. You know, it's a time of judgment.
Yeah.
And that's what we see here in Zephaniah. Zephaniah is predicting that the Babylonian Empire will come in and crush God's people and carry them into exile. But the promise is that as a result of that, God's people will be purified. And when all the dust settles, a people who are more true to Yahweh will exist in the land. So do you have some thoughts on the Day of the Lord or anything out of Zephaniah, what we've been talking about here?
Yeah. Well, I've been spending a little bit more time in the Old Testament, I think this year as well. But as you talk about this theme, right, like a day is coming, right? And yeah, it's this day of judgment where God is setting things, right. God is, like you said, he's intervening, he's showing up. And it's interesting because we talked about like there are hard things. I think in Habakkuk, you know, he's talking about this coming day. You know, he's raising up a nation. But it seems like a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right. The God's judgment, but right. It leads ultimately to the better thing.
Yeah.
And again, the suffering for the sake of his purposes, the hardships for the sake of what he's doing, and
I saw this in Psalms. This is dangerous because I'm going to try to find something that I wasn't planning on. This is out of Psalm 78, which we also read this week. Psalm 78, verse 34. Well, let me read the verses prior to that, because this is also talking about God's judgment. In this case, on the northern kingdom of Israel, the psalmist writes in verse 32, "Even though God had been patient, despite this, they kept sinning and did not believe his wondrous works. He made their days end in futility, their years in sudden disaster. When he killed some of them, the rest began to seek him. They repented and searched for God. They remembered that God was their rock, the Most High God, their Redeemer." And that's the sad truth. Sometimes God's got to bring the pain. The Day of the Lord has to come. Like it says here, very bluntly, when he killed some of them, the rest began to seek him. And that's really what you see. There's actually two days of the Lord that Zephaniah speaks of. So the first day of the Lord is this promised judgment that God is going to bring. And it's a devastating promise that God is going to come. He's going to bring this foreign army, and they're going to absolutely ravage the land. But if you go into chapter 3, you see another promise, another day of the Lord talked about in chapter 3, verse 11. He says, "On that day, you will not be put to shame because everything you have done in rebellion against me, for then I will remove from among you your jubilant, arrogant people, and you will never again be haughty on my holy mountain. I will leave a meek and humble people among you, and they will take refuge in the name of Yahweh." And then down in verse 16, "On that day, it will be said to Jerusalem, 'Do not fear. Yahweh your God is among you, a warrior who saves. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will be quiet in his love. He will delight in you with singing.'" So when you think about the Day of the Lord, it's kind of two sides of the coin. It's the promise that God is going to intervene to bring judgment, which is painful. But there's also a promise, the other side of that coin is he's doing that to purify for himself a people and to create on the earth a society, a community that does rejoice in him and that experiences his pleasure. So the Day of the Lord, those are some quick thoughts from Zephaniah.
Yeah. And just, I guess, one last little thing. So did it happen? Has it happened?
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the beauties of the scriptures, that we can see, hey, that many days of the Lord have happened. Mm-hmm. God has intervened to accomplish his purposes. And that gives us confidence that the day of the Lord that we're still looking forward to, the ultimate day of the Lord, is going to happen. Mm-hmm. God is going to intervene and establish his rule on the earth. Well, friends, I hope that these podcast episodes are encouraging to you. We love hearing from you. So if you've got questions about what you're reading in the Paseo Reading Plan, send them in. You can leave them as a comment on the YouTube video or email them to me, andrew@paseodelrey.org. We'll be back next week with another episode. And if you are not reading right now, I invite you to download the reading plan and jump in with us. You can start halfway through and you'll be reading the same passages that we are, that we're covering on these podcasts. So we love you guys. Keep following Jesus and learning from him.